On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. You're at your favorite podcast. Oh, yes, the place, the space, where the conversations are pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Today, Brains, we are working with a surgeon. Oh, yes, this is an ear, nose, and throat surgeon, Dr. Melinda Thacker. And I love doctors, nurses, and teachers. They're my favorite people on the planet because they could have been plumbers, gardeners, chefs, but what they decide to do is they work on the behalf of us. And it's a stressful job, Brains. You know, it is a stressful job and it's very intricate and it's very detailed. But we forget that they're people too. And it's so funny when I go into the doctor's office and my doctor says, oh, I got to pick up my prescription. I kind of look like you're not supposed to be sick. Nothing's supposed to be wrong with you. You're supposed to be perfect. But this is for the perfectly imperfect. This is for the surgeons that are struggling. And Dr. Thacker is also a coach, and she's coaching these great individuals through the process. So let's welcome her to the show. How are you? Can I call you Dr. Mel?
You can call me Mel. Just Mel is fine.
Just Mel?
Thank you. Yeah.
All those degrees and all those surgeries, honey, you need that DR in front of your name. You deserve it.
Yeah, if you want to, that's fine, but it's all the same to me.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being here on the Edge with me and my Brains. Tell us a little bit about you and how you show up in the world.
Thank you for having me. Very honored to be here. A little bit about myself. Let's see. I am basically a poor kid who comes from the Midwest, who comes from a family of no graduate degrees, no doctors. And at the age of 13, I decided, you know what, that is my path. And I stuck to it and I made it happen. And I did it with the thing between my ears, my brain. And it was hard and it took grit and it was really challenging. And there were a lot of low points and a lot of high points, and I did it. And then I realized once I finished that nobody prepares you to go out into the world. You're basically on this escalator up this mountain of external validation. And then you finish and you're like, now what? Like, how do I define success? What is important to me? Is it making money? Is it doing surgeries? Is it buying a big house? Is it having kids? Is it getting married? What is life? What does life mean for me? How can I make this one precious chance that I have on this earth mean something? Mm. How can I be in my 90s? God willing, right? And looking back and thinking, that's my life. I did that. I created that. I'm so proud of my legacy. And I'm telling you, I don't think it's money in the bank or surgeries done or hand-eye coordination or abilities or intellect or, you know, being in your ego, being very proud of your brain. It has to do with what you create, and it has to do with following your fascination. Fascination being defined as attention without effort. And I think if we do that, we're like the happy Sisyphus. I love the whole idea of Sisyphus who's pushing the boulder up the mountain. I guess he was confined to that as like a punishment by the gods because he loved life so much. So he's in like this eternal hell, just pushing this boulder. But Albert Camus, the French philosopher, says, we must imagine Sisyphus happy. And I love that statement because you can become a happy Sisyphus. You know, it's the grind. It's the getting up and going to work and going to bed and getting up and going to work and going to bed. And it feels like we are Sisyphus pushing a boulder. But if we're in our ego, if we're trying to be, you know, like the smartest person in the room and be and have some external validation for that, or be the best surgeon in the world and find external validation for that, we're going to create our own suffering. We're going to lose momentum. We're going to be an unhappy Sisyphus. But if we're doing something because in our heart of hearts, in our truest nature, we love it and we're following our fascination, it's attention without effort. We're just like, oh, a boulder? Let me just push you up this mountain. And we just keep going and going. Yeah, but then we create something beautiful.
Our ego is the gateway to the soul. And it needs to be fed. It needs to be nurtured. Yeah. It needs to be modified. It needs to be manicured. So yes, we need to be able to control that as well as a Sisyphus. I've never heard of Sisyphus before. So I learned something today, Brain. But I too have felt like the boulder, you know,
yeah.
I'm the boulder. I'm the rock. I'm just the one that's like this. I'm not being pushed. I'm just the one that's just sitting there tight within herself. And sometimes people are overwhelmed and they become mechanical animals. You know what I mean? They're just in the grind, like you said, getting up, going to work, going to, surgery after this and that. Sometimes I've been at the hospital or the doctor's office, and the doctor that comes in is just completely lifeless. It's like, okay, here, let me tick the box. Let me do this. Let me do that. There's no passion, no compassion. How do they bring the life force back into it? How do they bring the joy back into what they do? Because they're critical.
That's a great question. And you're right. A lot of us are dead inside, and I am not victim blaming. It is not our fault. It is purely the fault of culture. We are taught from a very young age that our abilities, our intellect, that must be celebrated. And so we get the A plus, we get the degrees, we go to the Ivy League school, we get into the exclusive society, and we think that is what brings us self-worth. So we confuse our self-worth with our abilities and our intellect. And that's where we create our own suffering. Doctors identify as massive egos and animal bodies, and that's what creates suffering. The truth is, doctors are humans. Humans are social primates. Humans are pack animals. We think we're special because we have this highly sophisticated thing called a prefrontal cortex that can compute and plan for the future and problem solve. And so we get into these kind of pissing contests where we're like, if you're a medical doctor, you're like, my prefrontal cortex works better than your prefrontal cortex. Therefore, I am more worthy. Or if you're a surgeon, you're like, my hand-eye coordination is better than your hand-eye coordination. Therefore, I am more worthy. And that is all a lie. It's all BS. And it causes us suffering. When we subscribe to that, we create our own suffering. So the first step is awareness to understand, like, you are an ego. Your ego is important, but you are not just an ego. You're not just this massive thinking brain on wheels. You are also an animal, and you have to honor that side of yourself. So it's not just honoring one piece. That is one piece of you. You have to honor the whole. And so the truth is, we are all worthy. We are all born whole, complete, perfect, and fully worthy, no matter our ability, no matter the ability to operate and fix a body part. So when we realize that, when we drop into that and just honor that, we're not just identifying the ego, we're identifying in our whole self as a social primate, an animal body with a primitive brain that is very much motivated to seek pleasure, avoid pain, and conserve energy. Okay, so we don't su suppress all of those real, true animal fears that our primitive brain brings up, and a prefrontal cortex on top. So that's where we get in trouble. We identify as an ego, and then when the other parts of us start screaming at us, then we want to numb out. We're like, whoa, I don't know what that's about. Let me go, watch a bunch of Netflix or drink a bunch of alcohol or have a bunch of sex with a bunch of people and just make myself feel
Oh,
better.
that sounds good. Sorry, doctors, but yeah, I'll have a drink, Netflix, and then have some sex.
Netflix and chill.
Exactly. But I get what you're saying. It's about the obsession. I was thinking about that too because something broke my heart. My mother's doctor, we went to see him and he had committed, well, he didn't commit. He died by suicide. No outlet. And I'm saying, okay, you've got access to the best. You can get the best antidepressant. But what is it that just did not allow you to break outside of yourself, your pain, your anguish, to seek help and to, resort to, suicide? And people don't think about that. Someone else was telling me, veterinarians, others that are life givers. They have the highest rate of suicide.
That makes
It's
sense to me.
to me, it didn't make sense.
It
I
does.
was thinking, oh, you know what? You're able to save that little kitten, or you help that, that puppy give four and that dog give 14 puppies. I would think that that is so much joy, but they say no,
It's not.
mindset.
And veterinarians are, they're the most empathetic, right? And they're going up against people who can't pay. They have a dog that's, and so they have to decide, no, I can't give care to your animal and watch an animal suffer and die. Or many of them just pony up the money, no pun intended. But, so it's like, it makes total sense to me because when we're in that external validation area where we're like, we're just going up the mountain, going to get our degree, and then we go, we finish. You become the veterinarian, you become the surgeon. Now you are just a human with a really hard job, and your job is full of a bunch of bureaucratic bullshit. Excuse me, can I swear? I'm sorry.
Yes,
I'm
that's
sorry.
fine. I mean, because it is. It is.
Yeah.
You're going against the grain, and then you have the patient, you have the hospital, you've got the rules and regulations, you've got the insurance companies.
Yeah.
Everybody's on your back. And they think because you pull out in a Mercedes or you pull up to a 2,800 square foot home that life is good. But no, you're still a prisoner in that.
Yeah.
So let's go to the solution seeker. How do they regain joy, passion, and excitement for the work that they do, or even just to level out, just to find some solace and some peace?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I mean, the first step is awareness to understand what's happening. Because when you're in the fog of it and you don't know why you feel so awful, you don't know why you're suffering, that unknowing, not knowing the answer, that's when I think we resort to extreme measures. There's 300 to 400 physician suicides a year, where we don't want to show weakness on top of it. We don't want to be stigmatized. We don't want to have our entire life's work taken away because we're having a moment of weakness. And so we resort to the worst thing we could possibly do and take our own lives. So the answer to that is to have awareness, understand and honor ourselves as humans, humans who are allowed to make mistakes. I mean, I am here with you. I have the most crippling social anxiety. Okay. And I am like taking action despite fear. I am sitting here with you. There's all of your listenership is listening to my words. That is terrifying to part of me. And I honor that and I let it come up and I'm like, I love it. I'm like, I love you. I love you
And
and
they
your
love you, and I love you too.
fear. So it's loving ourselves, loving those parts of ourselves that we want to suppress and push down. It's the whole idea of a beach ball underwater. You keep pushing and pushing and pushing, it's going to pop up. So you let these things, you let the dark side come up and you look at it. And that is should be done with a very trusted individual. It can be a therapist, it can be a coach. Whoever you can get, it can be a friend. I mean, start somewhere. Be witnessed in your truth and be honest with yourself. Really speak what your brain, and then look at your brain. What is in there? What kind of thoughts are you thinking? Because it's our thoughts that create our feelings. What kind of feelings do you have in your body? Our feelings drive our actions. Our actions produce our results. And if we don't like our results, we have to look at our thoughts. And our thoughts are just choices. And so we can always change them. And that's what a coach is. I'm a thought partner, So I have multiple tools to help my surgeons drop back into their bodies because we're very disconnected. We're taught to ignore our bodies. You have to pee? Too bad. Keep operating. You need to eat? Too bad. Go see the patient in the ER, in the trauma bay. So it's reconnecting with your body and listening. Listening in, our bodies are so smart. Our bodies process 11 million bits of information per second. Our brains process like 40. And so when we drop back into our body, we get those whispers of intuition. It's like a little, to train an animal, you have to give it praise. Animals learn by praise 50 times faster than they learn by beating it. You can't beat yourself into becoming better. You can't beat yourself into being skinnier or smarter. You have to, just like you would train a
You're
dog.
Mr. Debbie Downer. You can't drink. You can't watch Netflix. You can't have sex. You can't be beaten to submission. Oh my goodness. No, but
Am pro sex. You can do that.
I get what you're saying. I totally get what you're saying, all jokes aside, because it's some serious deep down work. And then just imagine the surgeon that's done it for 10 years,
Yeah.
or imagine the resident that's there, almost 23 hours a day
Yeah.
with hours sleep. And you look at your success, and I don't want to call them failures because medicine is not a perfect science.
It is not.
That's why they say you're practicing medicine and you do the very best you can. And I tell people all the time, I've got a friend right now that went all off on the doctor. And I said, you know what? Doing the very best they can. Do you realize how many other patients that they're seeing? It's not that they don't care, but they're a little disconnected too. They have a life. Maybe they're sick. Maybe their mom's sick. Maybe their kid's sick. Maybe they're broke. You don't know what the underlying message is. So when you're dealing with your physician, number one, and this is from a patient point of view, my mother used to always say, you don't mess with people that serve your food and give you your medicine.
Sage advice.
But be kind. Have a conversation. You know, if you don't like the results that you're getting, have that conversation. If that's not working for you, you have options, you have choices. You can always pick another physician. If you are a physician that's struggling, again, like Mel says, step back, take a deep breath. You know, look at the forest, beyond the trees, look at the endless possibilities. Recant and go back to why you started this from the get-go. Maybe your parents pushed you into it. You know, you're going to be a surgeon, you're going to be this. Or you could have had a will and a desire like Mel that says, you know what? I'm going to break this cycle and I'm going to show my family what I can do and I'm going to be proud of myself and I'm going to go into this work. But not only am I going to go into this work, I'm going to, you know, create another niche where I'm going to help others and not just in the operating room, but I'm going to be able to hold your hand. I'm going to have a conversation with you. And I think that that is beautiful and I think that it's very selfless. And it takes a lot of capacity. Not only, like I said, you're dealing with your schedule, you're dealing with your practice, but you're dealing with a set of egos. And you got to break through that first before they can trust you. Because, of course, it's difficult when everybody's the smartest one in the room.
Oh, April, it is like peeling an onion. And it takes a lot of trust and a lot of time and a lot of compassion and self-compassion. I always say there is, I tell my kids this all the time, you cannot have outrage without enrage. People who are kind to themselves do not go out and yell at other people and act like, act a fool. People who are kind to themselves are kind to others. And so it starts with self-compassion because there is very little self-compassion in my surgeon clients. There is a lot of beating themselves up. There's a lot of emotion suppression, and just they're all very action oriented. They have never looked inside. They've never looked at what's in their brain or felt what's in their body. And so it starts with really taking a look, shining a light in there, identifying what's there, putting it out, holding it in your hand, and then making a deliberate conscious choice. Do I want to continue with this or do I want to up level? Do I maybe want to shift? And it's little tiny shifts. They're like baby breakthroughs, is what I call them. Like little aha moments, as Oprah would say, that just kind of steer you. You steer a ship a couple of degrees, you're going to end up in a completely different location, years down the line, months down the line. And so that's the whole idea.
I mean, look at your career. Do you still want to be in the operating room? Maybe you want to teach. Maybe you want to coach. Maybe you want to take a sabbatical. Sometimes you can just say, you know what? Okay, I'll take a time out. And that's the best thing that you can do for yourself as well as your patients. You
Yes.
can't service anybody if you are a mess, you know, and again, the support that you have. It's difficult because everybody's racing against the clock. You've got the
Yeah.
hospital, you've got the insurance, you've got the patient, you know, wah, 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 wah. Everybody's in your ear. And nurses, you're working with surgeons, but nurses, they take the brunt of it.
You're right.
They take the brunt of it. I just, no disrespect to doctors, but the nurse administers the medication. She's watching the machines and the equipment, the amount of technology that's in there now, artificial intelligence, robotic surgeries, you know, being accountable for all of this, it's a lot going on in the medical industry, brain. So try to be your advocate and try to be kind. So let's ask some fun questions of you, Dr. Mel. If you were not a surgeon, what else would you like to be? What else have you thought about?
I'm realizing in my heart of hearts, I'm a coach. Like, I love coaching. It is so rewarding. Watching my clients just completely transform their lives is the most, like, it just makes my heart burst. It is, it's my most proud moment. And I don't make this pad my ego. I don't take credit. It is totally them. I am there along with them, kind of just like bringing them up the mountain, like, come on, we're on a journey, as their partner, but they are doing all of the heavy lifting. And I'm just such a proud coach. And like, that is absolutely the latter half of my life. I'm 40, what, three, 44, gonna be 44. So this is kind of like my new passion, my new love.
Okay,
Brings me joy.
so you're the mother of two.
Yep.
How are you coaching them?
Oh.
That's a whole different team.
Yes. And I love it. So we just implemented this thing called the marble jar. So in my house, and this is like
I
a little
like my
kitchen.
swear jar. I'm telling you, it's going on over here.
I don't know if that would, well, actually, we don't swear too much in here. My kids are pretty good, but my 8 and 10 year old, yeah, in the morning, they kind of get at each other because they're trying to get to school. And I've, you know, it's been a hard, it's, I've had a hard time trying to get them to not jump down each other's throats. So I realized they're just stressed out. They don't want to be late. And so they're not being kind. And so the marble jar is going to serve to support our tribe, our little tribe of four. So whenever we do something to support our little community in our house, we put a marble in. If somebody does something like starts, you know, getting down their sister's throat in the morning, you know, with unnecessarily, then we take a marble out. And so that's been like really motivating for them because, you know, my daughter helped my son with his bags as he's going into school, and she got a little marble. My husband cleaned the hamster's cage. We're like, oh, he's part of the family. Put a little marble. So we'll see where this goes. But that's like my new little coaching tool.
We all need an incentive. I do that for myself. I have a list. I have five boxes that I need to tick off every day. And at the end of the day, I give myself a little gold star like I did in elementary school.
I
I
love it.
remembered one day how that made me feel. Oh, when I looked and I had more gold stars than everybody else, again, I just thought I was the best. So I said, reward and recognize. That's what we have to do.
Yes.
You have to go back and pat yourself on the back.
And
Don't wait for
celebrate.
outside, yes, and don't wait for outside validation.
No,
It's
you
great
celebrate
when
you.
people in Mel applaud you. It's great, but when you can look in the mirror and say, you know what? Damn, I did a good job.
Yeah.
You know, I took a day off. I called in sick today and I, you know, went to the beach and did some self-care. You know, went and got a manicure, pedicure, you know, or I finished a course, or I finished a book, or you know, I cleaned the hamster's cage. Those things are important. It's the little things, Brain. See, you're looking for something grandiose. You're looking for this big, supersized reward. And it's not about that.
It won't
It's
bring you happiness.
no, it's incremental changes, little bit at a time. That's why we don't hop like kangaroos. That's like we walk. It's
Turtle
simple as
steps.
that. Exactly. If you're an appliance in the kitchen, what appliance would you be?
I have never thought of that question. What apply? I mean, the first thing that comes up is that mixer that mixes the cake batter.
You know, and I love this question because these questions tell about your character. So you, why would you want to be a mixer?
You know, I don't even have a reason. That's just what popped into my head. So
Really?
that's what came out my mouth. But let me think about this. I'd have to reflect. What's my reason? I guess because it has multiple uses. Like we use it to like fill up our little like Berkey water thing. We use the thing, and then I use it to like, you know, make savory dishes and sweet dishes, and it's just kind of like a jack of all trades.
But I think from looking at from the outside externally and from what I'm hearing you saying, it's like you like to bring things together.
Yeah,
You like to
yes.
mix them up and
Yes.
see what comes of that. You know, you don't want this over here, you don't want that over there. You want it to be together. So that's a beautiful thing.
Very
Me,
insightful.
I think I'd be the teapot. I
Why?
like it hot and steamy. I do. I love it, you know. So that makes me feel good. If you were a flower in the garden, what flower would you be?
I don't know my flowers too much, but we have this beautiful blue, I don't know what they call them, and perennials, I guess. I can't remember the name of it. I knew I was like, I knew I was going to have a mental block with my anxiety. I can't remember the name of it, but it's frozen New England. It's out in our yard, and it's like this gorgeous blue.
Okay.
Apologies, I don't know the name of the flower, but
You
it's
don't have
because
to
of the
know.
color.
That's okay. But
It
it makes you happy.
does.
There was something that you said, and can I tap into that? And I'm not being, it's an observation. It's not a criticism. But you say, with my anxiety.
Yes.
Okay. Is that something that we can change our vernacular and say, when anxiety shows up or anxiety is a challenge? But when we take ownership and we say, my anxiety, I hear that you're holding on to something that makes you anxious. Am
Yeah.
I not hearing that correctly? You know, just an
No.
observation.
Yeah, I know. I think that's a beautiful observation. That's excellent noticing. I kind of like to think of emotions as mine because then I own them. Like instead of saying like, oh, you know, you shame, we shame ourselves. Shame is a big piece of medical culture. And instead of, you know, feeling shame and being shamed, if you think this is my shame, now you own it. Now you hold it in your hands and you can do what you want with it. You know, you can put it in the back seat. It doesn't have to drive the bus. You can put it over here. It's different than saying like, you don't exist. I'm gonna ignore you. You know, I'm not gonna look at you. It's like, I look at you, I see you, and I own you. You're mine and I love you. You know, and you're part of the human experience. And I am totally okay with that. You want to feel big, feel as big as you want because I'm as open as the sky, spread out with all your big feelings. And it's just beautiful. So it's one of those things where you're leaning into those dark emotions unapologetically, without fear, just open arms and with compassion.
And again, like you said, I wanted to hear your answer to that because ownership is key. You know, it's like excuses. I can't deposit those, so I don't accept them.
Exactly.
And you can do, again, if you own it, responsibility. I used to love that in corporate America. You know, my boss would call me into the office because heaven forbid me, I did something wrong. But I would tell her, you were absolutely right. And I didn't realize that. Now that you've brought it to my attention, let me make corrective action. Do you have any suggestions? I tell you, and then I'd go and shut the door, and I'm like, that witch. But in all transparency, it was a strategy. But when you, in hindsight, when I think about it, I would go back and I would really process what she said, consider the source, but take responsibility, take ownership for it, because then you control it.
And you have agency, you have authority, you're in control. You know, Byron Katie, one of the mothers of coaching, says we have three businesses: our business, our own business, other people's business, and the universe's business. When we're in our own business, we have complete control. But it's important to take notice. How often are we in other people's business? How often are we thinking of what they think of us? How often are we in the universe's business? Angry at the weather, you know, the pandemic, that was the universe's business. You know, do we have lots of thoughts and opinions about it? Something we can't control. So whenever we get back into our own business, then we have control and we have authority, we have agency, we are driving the bus.
All right. Another question. If
Yes.
you could time travel, past, present, future, where would you land?
I wouldn't change anything in my past because I feel like everything happened for me. So I wouldn't go back. I don't think I'd want to go forward either. I think I would probably just, you know, ignore the time machine and not use it. I
Yeah,
wouldn't use it.
you're happy where you are. That's big. A lot
Yeah,
of
I
people
don't.
don't want to stay in the present. They don't want to stay in the present. They want to project into the future as to what if and what could possibly, or they want to go back. I know a lot of people, I ask this question, and they want to go back in time to rewrite history. But if you know, if you go backwards, you're altering something. You don't know. If you're in the present and you go backwards and you alter it, it's not going to be your present.
Right.
You know, so you have to figure out where you are in this time machine. If you were an animal, what animal would you be and
A
why?
dolphin.
A dolphin.
Yeah. Because you can surf, you can like play with all your dolphin friends and just, you know, be in the vast ocean, just having a good old time.
But you're also smart.
And you're smart.
You're smart and you're kind. And you're a contributor to society.
And
Dolphins
you're cute.
contribute
You're
so
right.
much. They contribute so much to science and research. And you're a communicator too. You know, do you remember, I don't know how old you are. Do you remember Flipper?
Of
That was,
course. Yeah.
Flipper was awesome. Flipper and Lassie. They were the
Yep.
smartest, they were the smartest two on TV. They
And
should bring them
adorable.
back on Netflix.
They should, yes.
And in closing, Dr. Mel. What do you want your legacy to be? How do you want to be remembered?
I want to be remembered as a coach who helped thousands of surgeons and helped them find themselves, and buoyed them in honoring their own self-worth that has always been there, but they just haven't recognized it. And hopefully preventing some bad things from happening and preventing surgeons from leaving the field because I see that happening, preventing surgeons from harming themselves. And if I can do that, if I can even help just one surgeon, then I am so proud of myself, but it would be amazing if I could help multiple, many thousands.
You can, by the sound of your voice and this interview. Brains, I need you to go in, love, like, and share, and subscribe. I forgot to ask how to get in contact with you, Dr. Mel.
Yes, I am on Instagram. That's probably the most active social media thing for me. So I'm at the underscore surgeon underscore coach, or you can go to my website, which is www.melthackercoaching.com.
MelThatcherCoaching.com. Did you hear that, Brains? Go in, check it out. If you're not a surgeon, if you may be a nurse practitioner, if you're in this realm, maybe you can get some tips and tricks to help your coworker that is a surgeon. Maybe you can work with Dr. Mel to branch off and be a conduit or a vessel of information to help others in the medical field that are struggling. I know I've got some great nurse coaches there, some nurse practitioners. All of them have different responsibilities. They have different roles, but the one great common denominator is that they're all a human being. They all need to be loved. Thank you so much, Dr. Mel, for being here with me on the edge. Continue to do the great work that you do, because the ears, nose, and throat need you.
Thank you. Thank you for
All right.
having me.
All right, brains. Have a good day.